So today's daf is a wonderful new parak we're holding on Yeshnofli to begin a daf kufchet at the Halakha Mishnah. Yeshno chalinu manchilin, yeshno chalin velo manchilin. This basically is based actually on the story of Benot Zlofchad, which played such a role in Yoshua that we just finished. And there the Torah says like this. Ve'el b'nei Yisrael tadaber limor. We're going to be darshing these psukim. If you want to look inside, you can look inside. It's Perek Chav Zayin in Bamidbar. Ish ki amut uben enlo v'ha'avartem et nachalato levito, which clearly implies that if there, he doesn't even know, doesn't say it, but if there's no bat, that it would go to the ben, the nachala. V'im enlo bat unetatem et nachalato le'chav. So if there's no daughter, then the person who dies and has neither son nor daughter, his nachalo would go to his brothers. And the truth is, this isn't strictly correct, as we're going to see very soon. V'im ein lo achim, unetatem et nachlato l'achi aviv. If his brothers do not live, so then the nachalo will go up one generation to his uncles, which is also not really strictly true, but this pasuk works out better than the previous one. The reason is that's strictly true is because the nachal will never go to the brothers before it goes to the father. The only reason that his brothers are going to be getting the nachala when he dies is because be'etzem, the nachala goes up after there's no descendants, goes up a generation to the parent, the father, not the parent, the father specifically. It would be best to pay attention to this because all the yisodos of the parak is based on this. So you'll be going up one generation, you'll hit the father. If the father is alive, it will not go to the brothers. And therefore, the posik in posik tet, which says, im ein lo bat unetatem nachlato le'achav, is misleading, because what it really means is, we'll see where we learn this out from in a moment, that you'll first try to give it to the father of the deceased. If the father of the deceased is not alive, then the descendants of the father of the deceased will be getting the nachala. The descendants of the father of the deceased are by definition the brothers and sisters of the deceased. So the truth is it's only going to his brothers, not through him, it's going through his brothers, through his father. So the truth is there's only one nachala, father to son and son to father. There's no other nachala. Everything else is a direct result of that. Since if the father isn't alive, it'll again go down to the descendants of the father. And if those descendants are alive, they're going to be the brothers of the mate. If the descendants aren't alive, but they may have grandchildren, so those will be the great-great-nephews of the mate. But that has nothing to do with it. It's not that the great-nephews are going to inherit the mate. They're inheriting their great-great-grandfather, that's all, who inherited the mate directly. So there's really only one nachala. Once a person remembers that, all of the dinim of nachalot are absolutely clear. It sounds very complicated on the surface. There's one choice. First go down, then go up. That's all. Never turn to the right, never turn to the left, ever. The problem of Benot Zlofchad, of course, that since the one violation of the Seder of the Nachalot is a husband being yarish to his wife, so if the Benot are who have no brothers marry out of Shevet, then if they die, the husband, who is from a different shevet, will end up being a nochel. And that's exactly how the whole parsha of Nachalot came to be written. The Benot Zlofchad first questioned why they're not getting a nachala, and so this is what was told to them, the pasuk that we're reading. As a result of this psukim, the diak and the pasuk of She'iro, the children of Yair ben Menashe came to complain about what in the world is going to happen if a woman marries out of nachala, meaning out of Shevet, and that destroys the whole Seder on Nachalot because it's the one violation. Okay, so, again, the simple rule to remember is there's only one Nachala. Down first, up second. That's it. Out of that come all the rules of Nachalot with all of their confusion. It's all very simple. And there's one other rule that you need to remember. And that is that wherever there's a node in the up or the down, the node doesn't have to be alive. So in other words, if you go up, the node going up is the father. If the father is alive, he'll keep it. But if the father is dead, it doesn't matter that he died before he got the Yerusha. it's as if he got the Yerusha and then died, at which point it reverts down again. If the first node that it hits down, which are the brothers of the deceased, are dead, doesn't matter. They inherited it. It continues to go down. If there's any descendants down, maybe three generations later, that means that the great-great-great nephews of the mate are going to end up inheriting him, and it's going to go on that ad infinitum. If there's nothing left of that generation, in other words, that node that it hit first, it reverts back, beep, and goes up to the next node, boop, hits the next node being dead, now goes back down again, beep. Anybody who's alive, it now spreads out in all directions going down for as many generations as possible. Nobody's in the direct down line, goes all the way back up, hits the node, goes up to the node above, beep. I assume he's dead. Okay, and this will keep on going until all it hits all the way up. If the guy has no relatives at all, it'll hit Yaakov Avinu ultimately. He's bound to have some relatives going down. So Mamela, it is impossible to conceive of someone who is not going to have an heir in the Seder HaNachalot unless he's a ger. That's the only possibility. But otherwise, by definition of this simple rule, everybody has ultimately millions of heirs. One violation to this rule. And that violation caused the upheaval of Benot Tzlafchad and all types of excitement coming in per Sefer Shoftim, as we'll see, with the story of Yiftach HaGiladi, and this became a disaster. But anyway, there is another issue that seems to violate the Nachalot, and that is a woman who marries out of Shevet, since her husband can inherit her, as we continue now on in the Psuki. V'im in achim la'aviv, and now, if there are no brothers to the father, so then unetatem et nachlato l'she'ero, oh, the she'ero always means shared flesh, right? She'er basar. Akarov elav, mimishpachto, all extra words, we're going to have to figure out what each one of them means. What is Hakarov Elav supposed to mean according to this? Viarashota. Okay. So now we're going to analyze this in the Mishnah. So therefore, our primary point is there are those who are Nochel and also Manchil. And that, of course, is the interrelationship between father and son, son and father. That's always going to go in both directions. Yesh Nochalin, velo Manchilin. Now there it's possible for someone to be in the line of Yerusha, but not to be Morish back. For instance, if someone will be Yorish his mother, then the question is, if he's Yorish his mother now, will he ever be Morish back to his mother? No, because it will always go through his father, which is the way we're going to define Mishpachat, Av Lebein. So we'll talk about this. So we do have cases in which a person can be Manchil and not Nochel. It's also possible, because obviously that's a mirror image. In other words, if the mother would be Manchil and not Nochel, then the son would be Nochel and not Manchil. As a matter of fact, it doesn't even seem to be necessary to state this, as the Gemara is going to ask, but it's simply the inverse of your first statement. If there's got to be, if you're telling me that there are such a thing as Nochalim and not Manchilim, then there have to be Manchilim velo Nochalim, because it's simply the inverse case of the people that we just spoke about. And there's also cases where there's no relationship of Nachla at all, lo nochalim velo manchilim. So let's take a look at the rules. Evo nochalim manchilim. Ha'av et habanim. Habanim et ha'av. The truth is that that's all you have to know. And indeed, the Rishonim question, what's the point of all the other rules? And they're really only there in order to bring out subtleties about the structure of the Mishnahs. We'll see that allow us to see clearly the cases where that doesn't work. It's because once we knew Av to Bein and Bein to Av, everything else follows, really. So the Av et Abanim, Abanim et Av. And what that would mean is that the Achim min Av, but only because the Achim min Av are the sons of the person, of the deceased father. So it's really Av LeBein, that's the only way that he's going to be able to ever be Manchil to his brothers. But Lemaisa, since it works in both directions, let's just note that a brother who dies, you could be his heir. And not because you'll really be his heir, but because your joint father is the heir. And since your brother is dead, you're the one that's going to inherit.
Because your father's dead too.
Right. But this would mean, of course, it would be there were no descendants to that brother. If there were descendants, then again it would have gone down first, because first the Bonim are Nochalim, the father. So there are the Achim and Ahav. So all of those cases are the essential Nochalim and Manchalim. It goes in both directions. Now, a man can inherit a mother, ha'ish et imo, ha'ish et ishto, And also B'nei Achayot. Now, B'nei Achayot is an unnecessarily complex case which doesn't work out well in creating the parallel case. And therefore, the Rashban prefers the Girsa of B'nei Achot to B'nei Achayot. Because B'nei Achot would be very simple. So let's say you have children of the brother. Let's take the case the Rashban brings using the names from our parsha. So you have the one of the brothers of, let's say, Dina. So let's take Reuven, right? So Reuven has a sister who's called Dina. Dina has children. Now those children are the B'nei Achot, not B'nei Achayot. Okay? So the B'nei Achot, they are actually going to be your age, their uncle. Why?
In the absence of the father, right?
Always, yeah. It's always that way. Whenever we talk about a generation that is common to yours, it's only because it's first gone up and then come back down again. So by definition, it's always going to be in the absence of. The point that David is making is the problematic part of the pasuk. As I pointed out, if you note, v'im ein lo bat unetatem et nachlato le'echav is very misleading. If a man doesn't have a son, it says give it to his daughter. If he doesn't have a daughter, give it to his brother. That's not true. Because you're really giving it to his father. We know that from the pasuk that comes later, in which it says, Natatem nachlato le'shero ha'karov. And we're going to define karov as being a father based on other sources, as we'll see. So this is the misleading part. But since it's the norm, that if that generation is gone, the previous generation is gone. So we talk about it as if you're going to be Yorish, the brother. Or in this case, as if the nephews from the sister are going to be Yorish, their uncle. They're not really being Yorish, their uncle. They're really being Yorish, their grandfather. So Reuven's father and Dina's father is Yaakov. Assuming there were no other sons, so then it would have gone to the daughter. If it's going to go to the daughter, it's going to go to the children of the daughter, even if that daughter is no longer alive.
Will it go if there are both sons and daughters?
No. If there's both sons and daughters, it's like any other Nachalah. It only goes to the son.
It only goes to the son.
Correct.
The daughter doesn't.
Right. But I mean, we're obviously talking about a case where it's possible now to go down the generations if there's nobody else around but Dina. So now it's going to work perfectly well because it'll go to the children. It turns out that the children of a sister are going to be Yorish him. And that works out very, very well. And they're going to come, so to speak, from the Koyach of Yaakov through the Koyach of their mother. But there's no way for them to give back the Nachala to Reuven, who died, you see. Because they're always going to give their Nachala to their father, not to their mother Dina. And therefore, there's no way that it can get back to Reuven. Therefore, they're only going to be Nochel, but there's no way for them to be Manchil. Okay, so this would be the way that we speak about B'nai Achot. It's not that B'nai Achayot is wrong, it's just that it's hard to construct the opposite case without being very wordy.
B'nai Achayot mean?
The truth is the Rashbam says, look, if you want to push it, you could, even those people have the gears of B'nai Achayot, could mean this. It's just a way of referring to the children of siblings where one of them is feminine. So to make it clear, we say B'nai Achayot.
Plural.
But the simple meaning is B'nai Achayot are cousins, both of whom have a mothers who come from the same father. So they are sons from mothers that have a common father. So they're cousins that have a joint grandfather. So Lamaisa, they will get whatever is coming from one from the other, if there were just two daughters. So that means that Lamaisa, if one dies without descendants, their auntie dies. So then their common grandfather gets the auntie's property because it goes up, since there's nowhere for it to go down. But once it goes up, and grandpa's not here, it goes down again. If it goes down again, it gets to their mother, because there's no surviving brothers. If it goes to their mother, and the mother isn't here, it goes to them. So in the same way, it means that cousins can end up being yorish through the grandfather. But that the question is, how do you create the opposite case where they can't give back? So the reason they can't give back is for a different reason. It's because it'll always go to their father, not to their mother. So to create the opposite case, the mirror case, is more complex. So how are we going to say, but not what? So therefore, it's the same case. The mirror case is the same case. They'll give to each other, but they won't, they'll give one to the other, but not the other to the one. So how are you going to say? How are you going to say that in the Mishnah? So it's much easier. What the Mishnah does do is it creates a mirror image from a ben of an achot, in which case you can easily say, but the uncle won't be yorish, but the nephew will be yorish. That's easy to put it that way. So, which is exactly what we do. So b'nei achot, therefore, would be the best way of reading it, b'nei achot, and they would all be nochel, so they will inherit their uncle, but they'll not, will, if they die, the nephews of Reuven, they'll never be able to give Reuven back money in the other direction, so there'll have no way to be mancha Reuven, or Reuven's family. Well, of course, they're the only Reuven's family anyway, so, okay? So in this case, they would be the examples of the Nochalim v'lo
Manchilim. And why is that? Because they went through that.
Because it'll always go to their father, and their father isn't related to Reuven. But it can come back down to them from their grandfather, because it went up to him. So again, this it's a very simple set of rules. First down, then up. Always a node, first down. First down to males, second rule. Second down to females. Then up. Again, never up to females. Only down to females. Up hits a node, goes down, first males, then females. Nothing left goes up to the male node, and so on. So this gives you the whole picture, unless it's interrupted by marriage. And then a deceased wife. That becomes a problem. So the opposite case would be Ha'isha et Baneha, which is Ha'ish et Imo in the other case. So now the aim, her child, the Isha et Ba'ala, and the Ache Ha'im, which is the Reuven case that we spoke about, the uncle, will only be able to bequeath, but will never be Nochal. And this is exactly what we just said. And it is so exactly what we just said that the Gemara is going to say, we're not stupid. What's the point of putting that in the Mishnah? It doesn't add anything. You just told me that the first direction goes only in that direction. You said that there are no chalim v'lo manchilim. So obviously, if we construct it in the opposite way, then these are the ones that will not be no chal, and they'll only be manchil, right? Okay. So that's, you could see now clearly why we wouldn't want to say b'nei achayot. Because how would we explain they're not going to be manchil? It'd be the same case. Now, the other case where you have lo nochalim v'lo manchilim would be brothers from a common mother. So brothers from a common mother, achim min ha'ein, that do not share a father, lo nochalim v'lo manchilim, there will be no Yerusha there whatsoever. Now, again, this doesn't mean there's no Yerusha there whatsoever, that there's something that prevents Yerusha. There's just nothing that gives Yerusha. If l'maisa, they also happen to be related in a different way, then it's certainly possible that a mother will end up inheriting her son. But she'll inherit her son only because she was a related cousin and was inheriting her son through a common great-grandfather, something like that. It's easy to construct a case like that. So it's not fair to say a mother will never inherit her son. That's not true. It's that a mother will not inherit her son directly. Obviously, anybody could be related to anybody. You could be related to your son also in such a way that you end up inheriting your son because you have a common grandfather. There's nothing wrong with that. You could easily construct a case which a brother married a niece and so on and so forth. It comes back again to the mother. Now the niece has a child, goes back up to common grandfather, comes back down now to the mother, so that the mother indeed inherits her son. It's crazy, but it ends up to be perfectly possible and even rather common. You know, especially today, Hasidic families, it happens all the time. Right? It's all intermarried, so basically cousins are marrying each other all the time, so a mother can easily inherit a son, but only by accident, so to speak. So therefore, the Mishnah says, a mother doesn't inherit a son, but it's important to remember, there's nothing wrong with a mother inheriting a son. It's just that she won't get it through the standard nachla of son to mother. That's all. It's coincidental that he's also a son besides being a cousin. Okay, so now we have that clear. If we get the Mishnah clear, the rest of the parak is a breeze. If the Mishnah isn't clear, then we get into Tzaras. So now what we need to do is to see where we get all of this from and how it fits into the gears of the Mishnah and so on. As I mentioned to you, the real problem is the way that the Pasuk sort of glosses over the fact that brothers don't really inherit each other. That's what's so misleading about the Pasuk. So that's going to be our first concern, really, after we just look at the structure of the Mishnah, because the structure of the Mishnah is a bit funny. I mean, why do we write in the Mishnah? We say the Av et HaBanim, and then the Banim et HaAv. I mean, does that make sense? I mean, normally it's the other way around. Why would you say the Av et HaBanim? Say, I mean, what would you write? If you were writing this Mishnah, you would have written, children inherit a father, and a father inherits children, not a father inherits children first, and then children can also inherit a father. Right? First of all, says the Gemara, look, to say that a father inherits children is inherently ugly. Because what you're saying is that the child predeceased the parent, but worse, you're saying the child had no children. So you're going to start with what do you got to start with a tragedy? So, I mean, so first of all, says the Mishnah, I mean, why should I tani avet abanim bereisha? Shouldn't it say abanim et abereisha? First of all, because we have a general rule. Atchule bepuranut alo matchule. You don't start a sugya with the worst case that you can come up with. Why talk about a tragedy where a child died young, not leaving any descendants? Furthermore, I mean, the Pasuk doesn't talk about that case. The Pasuk talks about Ish ki yamut uben emlo. From where we learn out that means that if there would have been now the other way, the ben would have gone that the original would have gone to the ben and not to the bat. But that means that the way the Pasuk opens up the whole story of Benot Tzlofchad, which is what it's talking about over here, v'habartem et nachalato levito. It's taking for granted the father died and either the son or daughter inherited him. Whoever heard of a Mishnah ignoring the primary source that it's a Mishnah about? So how do you explain this? The Tana. So how do you explain our Tana? The Tana actually is drawing our attention to something. Because the truth is, since the only way we know, surprisingly, that the father inherits is from a drasha, because again, as we pointed out, the Pasuk never said that. The Pasuk says the brothers inherit. It never talks about the father inheriting. So we first have to figure out that a father inherits from a drasha. And in fact, that is the most striking thing to us that is left to us to define in the parsha. The Tana always looks into a parsha to discover what he needs to define, and that becomes what is most important, what is most chaviv in the parsha to focus on. Therefore, the whole Mishnah, it's amazing, right? That one piece, it becomes the construction of the Mishnah where we'll talk about the father inheriting the son before we talk about the son. Because isn't that the main issue when you read the Pasuk? You think to yourself, gee, what would have happened if the son would die and the father was alive? I wonder. Starts the Tana by saying, exactly, a father inherits a son. So it's beautiful, actually. We go straight from the Parsha directly to the Mishnah. So, Aini da Atile Midrasha Chavivale. Okay, which of course leads to the obvious question, so what's the drasha? So how do we know that a father inherits the son, which is the one piece that the Pasuk glosses over? So umay drasha. D'tanya. She'ero, since it says in the Pasuk over here, im ein la'achim et son, im achim la'aviv, unetatem et nachlato l'she'ero, to his closest flesh. This must refer to the father. Ze'av. This teaches us that a father, we're going to question all this later. So this teaches us that the father will come first before it will go to his own brothers. Okay? So he's considered to be genetically the closest to his son. That's the next case. Yeah, but it doesn't matter. We understand that the Pasuk is a general rule. The Pasuk is saying, She'ero, we're going to see. We derive that Karov comes first, as we'll see. So that teaches us that the Av is Karov, Kodem La'achim. So if that's the case, how do you know that he's not Kodem La'ben? If you're saying, give the Nachla the She'ero, and you're saying the Pasuk is out of order, that's what you're saying. I mean, because obviously you've skipped over, as Dovah just pointed out, you've skipped over Tupsak, okay? And now you're jumping into She'ero, and you're saying She'ero comes first. First, look at the genetics. Then let's talk about the brothers, right? So, if that's the case, maybe really the missing piece, which is the father, is not only the primary piece before giving it to brothers, maybe it's the primary piece before giving it to sons. In other words, how do you know to go down first and then up? We said that's rule number one. Down, then up. How do you know? So maybe he should come even before the son. Yochel Yekodim Lebein. Therefore, continues the pasuk to say, L'she'ero hakarov elav. And the hakarov elav adds a very important thing, which is to tell you, karov, karov, kodem. The closer you are, the more you are kodem in the nachla. So therefore the hierarchy is the karov. I don't understand, why is that called karov? Show me how the Torah defines karov. What does karov mean? Umara itel rabot tabein. What makes you say that the son would be karov? Yes. And the ach would not be karov. That's what you're saying. It must mean that it has to go to the son and then to the father, which then means to the brothers. I'll tell you very simply. I'll prove it halakhically. Because marbe ani et habein, shekein kam tachat aviv liyada ulistei achuza. There's two places where a son, as opposed to a brother, is considered to be the replacement of a father, which means that the Torah views a son almost as an extension of a father and not a brother. And where would that be? A father buys an Oma Ivriya. The kesef that is used for the buying of the Oma Ivriya, he can use as kesef kiddushin, essentially, to turn the purchase into an act of marriage called yi'ud. The Torah says specifically, v'im livno yi'adena, which means that he's able to take his purchase and make it a kiddushin for his son to be able to utilize. Which means that the Torah views the son and the father as identical. There's another place where this is also true, and that is the case of Stei Achuzah that we discussed recently. A guy gives his sada to Hegdash. The Balim has the right to be paid that sada. But if the Gizbar sells the sada to an Ish Acher, someone else, then it's too bad. At the Yovel, the sada goes out to the Kohanim and never goes back to the owner. Now this is fascinating because if you think about it, it's the only other case besides marriage where a nachla can disappear. So it's very connected to the whole concept of the fundamental vision of Benot Zlofchad and nachla, right? In that case, it specifies in the pasuk le'ish acher. And we learn out that that ish acher means anyone else besides his son. But had the Gizbar sold the field to the son, then it would not have been considered to be a violation of the Seder HaNachalot, would not go out to the Kohanim, and would go back to the father. Which means that we're looking at the son and the father as a common entity. Masha Inked, if the Gizbar had sold it to an Ach, then it would be just like selling it to anybody else, kaput. And it now goes out to the Kohanim at the end. So that shows that the Torah views, just like a man cannot give the Oba Ivriya to his brother for Yehud, he can only give it to his son. And just like the son is the only one who, if he purchases now a Stei Achuzah, is as if the guy bought it back himself, the father bought it back himself, we see clearly from those two cases that a son is an extension of a father. Therefore, if we're going to talk about Karov, the Karov is going to be down first, then up. Down to again to the brothers. So a brother can never come before a son. And of course, the Gemara asks the obvious question. There's one place where a brother takes the place of the deceased. The most famous case of Nachala of all, which we see is totally interrelated with the idea of Nachala, because where a man dies without children, a brother takes his place, and now that brother is Zeichin, the Nachala of that person, as if they're one person.
Right, that's because he doesn't have children.
Does it? David. Okay, so ask the Gemara, I mean, is there a greater sense of replacement of another human being than by Yibam? And the Gemara, of course, gives David's answer. Well, that's all very nice. But the only reason that a son can't be Miyabim is because if he exists, there's no Yibam. So if anything, that shows that the son is the true replacement. It's only where the true replacement isn't there that we take the ersatz replacement, that the brother will let him stand in. But if a man dies leaving a son, then his wife will never get yibum, obviously.
Is there any, I'm just thinking, maybe yibum should have gone to the father instead of the brother.
It does, actually, in a way. That was the story with Yehuda.
Yeah.
That's and the truth is that before Matan Torah, as the Ramban points out, that would have been the correct order. Since now it became a violation of Erva, the Torah chooses which Erva, but that's a different issue.
Yeah.
And we know that the Erva point is more important because it'll always be Mavatul Yibam and even Pata the Tzora and so on and so forth. So this becomes the counterpoint of Yibam versus Erva, which in Kabbalah is the fundamental issue really in Maaseh Bereishis. It defines the entire development of genetics. It's Kayin, it's Chesed, right? And why marrying a sister is called Chesed, because Kayin married a sister. Ultimately, the interrelationship of genetics is based on really incestuous connections from the beginning, and then we have this gradual stretching of the gene pool, et cetera, et cetera. This is like a fundamental issue in Kabbalah, and it's a fundamental issue in Halach in terms of not teaching the Marsha understands the nature of the prohibition of teaching Dinei Arayos publicly is this problem. It's to try to understand the resolution of the contradiction between the Din of Yibum, in which Erva is considered to be an advantage, which is no Chiyav of Yibum unless there's an Isser Erva, which is brought out clearly in the Gemara by Beit Shammai, and on the other hand, the fact that Erva seems to stand in the way of Yibum. So this involves you in all types of understanding of the nature of the relationship, going all the way back to Maaseh Bereishis, then the death of Cain and Heva, which turns out to be the competition between these incestuous issues, because they both had sisters with extra sister, who gets the extra sister, and so on and so forth, right? It's like way, way back, goes all the way back. It's the reason that Moshe marries Tzipora, who is the daughter of the Keni, because he's the Tikkun of Kayin, and Moshe stands for Evel. So he's rebuilding that, and this gets into Shais, which now builds Malchus Mashiach, which is why it's called Shos. We are, you know, so it's, you know. No, I mean, we've discussed some of the issues in Rus and so on.
You mentioned the case, of course, where there is no son. What about the Gemara there also said if there is a son, but he died, she would do it because it would be Darchinam. Is that Rabban or is that...
If he subsequently died.
Yeah, if he subsequently died, but maybe if he died and still had a son and still... Maybe,
all right, we'll wait till we get to Yibamba son, in which case you're talking about. Sounds interesting. Okay. So now let's just look at the conversation of David's mind. I want to read the mind of David. So we do that by looking at the Gemara. And the Gemara says like this. So how do I know? It says the Gemara, Adarabba. Ah, indeed, but klum yesh yibum ela b'mokum she'ein bein. So which one is more fundamental? Ha b'mokum she'yesh bein ein yibum? So there you go. We now can show that we can't really use yibum as an indication of the primacy of a brother. Wait a minute, says the Gemara, and if we could... I mean, you're making it sound like, well, it's a good thing we had that in the background, because otherwise we got a real problem. I mean, why would we have a real problem? I mean, usually we go according to the majority. In other words, the fact is we see a pattern. We see the case of Yud, and we see the case of Steyachuza. I mean, there's other dinim also, for instance, Evet Ivri, in which you're able to be Evet Kanani, which you're able to be Vitnachalta Motan Livnechem Acharechem, things like that. And all of these things point to a general pattern of the son coming first, you know, and not the brother. And then we have this one case of Yibam. Let's say we wouldn't have had this idea that Yibam actually is only taking the place of a son. So we would still have a pattern in only one case when it comes to the Ach. So ask the Mara, so you're telling me only because we have this answer. And what if David wouldn't have been here? Time of the Ika High Pirch. Allah, if we wouldn't have come up with this answer, I'm sorry, David. Hey, we love you. Allah, if we wouldn't have had this answer, so then what would I would have said? That Hav, I mean, Ach Adif? I still wouldn't have thought the Ach is better than the son, because typically the Achatar, Teva Achachoda. I mean, basically, we've got two against one. We've got Yud and Steyachuza, and if we look further, we'll even have other things. We've got Yud and Steyachuza on the one hand. And then we have this thing on the other hand, you know, the case of Yibam, okay, even if we did. So wouldn't it be two against one? Nah, no. Because all of the other cases come back to this. How do you know that in Steyachuza, if the Gizbar sells to a son and doesn't sell, that over there it's like selling to the father, but if he sells to the brother, it's like selling it to an Ishacher? You define, it says Ish Acher. Now you said Acher means V'lo Abein, but maybe Acher means V'lo Ah. So we got to go back to Yud. So then we, and that's one case, because we're trying to prove Steyachuza. Same thing is true about Evet Ivri. I keep saying Evet Kanani. So if now I turn it around and I say, how do you know? Maybe indeed the din of Steachuz is that if you sell it to a son, poof, but if you sell it to an ach, then it goes back to the brother. How do you know? Oh, I know that from Yehud. Well, why didn't you know it from Yibum? Yibum is because of this problem, that the son is really the primary replacement. So then it all boils down to this answer. If you wouldn't have this answer, you wouldn't have two cases, you wouldn't have three cases, or all the other cases that we learn, as the Rambam points out, as the Rashbam points out, are all based on Yehud and this logic, that Yibum cannot disprove Yehud, but it's always a one-to-one situation. Once we answered the issue of Yibum, now we've got a pattern. Yeah, we've got a lot of cases where the ben is Enid as the primary replacement for the father, ultimately including Yibum itself, of course. So Lamaisa, the Steachuz Gufa, says the Gemara, I only know from the very answer that I just gave to the question here about Yibum, and therefore I need to point it out to you because in the end everything stands or falls on that answer. Otherwise, we would have really no basis whatsoever to say that necessarily a son should come before a brother. How do we know which one is karov? And therefore, steachuz agufa mehai taimahu dekakaime leilatana. It's the reason of klum yesh yibum ela b'makom she'ein bein ha'yesh bein ein yibum. That is precisely how I know that the acher, when it comes to steachuzah, has to be patterned after Yehud, and not after the din of Yibum. Yesh nochalin o manchilin, v'yesh nochalin v'lo manchilin, manchilin v'lo nochalin, lo nochalin v'lo manchilin. V'elu nochalin o manchilin, ha'av et ha'banim, ha'banim et ha'av, ha'akin min ha'av. All of these are nochalin o manchilin. They goes in both directions. Ha'ish et imo, v'ish et ishto, uvnei achot, nochalin, but lo manchilin. Ha'isha et banea, ha'isha et ba'ala. And the ach of the aim, which is the uncle that was morish, but he can't be yorish. So all of these are manchilin, v'lo nochalin. Ve'achim in ha'aim, lo nochalin, v'lo manchilin, unless, of course, they're related in some other way. Mashna, diktani, ha'av et habanim bereisha, Litnei habanim et ha'av bereisha. First of all, because, I mean, the way that we have it is terrible. It's etchuli b'pranuta. And etchuli b'pranuta lo matchilin. And furthermore, I mean, the pasuk puts it that way. It says, ish ki yamutu ben ein lo. It doesn't say ben ki yamut or ish ki yamut v'av ein lo. V'tana. I did the atyalei midrasha chaviv alei. And what indeed is the drasha? The tanya. She'ero is the ha'av. Melamed she'af kodem la'achin. Yochia kodem even la'bein. Talmud lomar ha'karov, which teaches us karov, karov kodem. Umara ito l'rabot et ha'bein v'lo'otzia ta'ach. Marbe ani et ha'bein, she'ken kam tachat aviv li'ya'ada u'listeyachuza. Adarabah, marbe ani et ha'ach, she'ken kam tachat achiv li'yibum. Yeah, but kum yeshibum, ela b'makom she'en bein. You're telling me that it's only time to eke high pircha. If you hadn't come up with this smart alecky response, so alavachi havamina ach adif. Typically, docha tarte vacha choda. No, because there isn't tarte. There's only one case, and that's the case of Yehud. Because the steachuzah itself doesn't say beferish. I only know the din of steachuzah gufa mihai taima huda ka kaime leilatana. Quote. Klum yesh yibum ela b'makom she'ein bein, or yesh bein ein yibum. And let that be engraved upon your heart.